Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome to the place where I am prescribing hope for healthy families. I hope that you have been listening in to our challenge to adopt 52 habits for healthy parenting this year. We have been talking about just some foundational skills that seem so simple, but I promise you, if you intentionally invest, will fundamentally transform your parenting experience. We've talked about the importance of prayer and incorporating prayer into your daily life. We have talked about memorizing scripture. We have talked about listening to Christian music, and we have talked about getting plugged into a local church. So I hope that you'll go back and listen to those. You can also find more information on my social media, that's Instagram or Facebook, at Dr. Nurse Mama, and you can join people from all over the country who are saying, you know what? I'm in. I want a different parenting experience. So I hope that you will do that and follow along here each week as we introduce a new habit for healthy parenting every week. And I want you to be sitting with us a year from now and looking to see how far you've come and to celebrate our success together. Now, today we have a serious topic, as we do from time to time. I am going to give you a warning now. You may want to adjust your listening audience, but even though we're talking about a tough topic, I promise to do it in as gentle a way as I can. Now, today we're talking about pornography. Not too long ago, we had a show on pornography and had some issues with the recording, and so we're coming back to revisit this for those of you who have written in and asked about it, or for those of you who may have missed it. This is an epidemic that is sweeping the country and is very, very concerning to me. And I'm going to be sharing with you today a chapter, actually, from my book that I wrote during COVID. This is called Behind Closed Doors, A Guide to Help Parents and Teens Navigate Through Life's Toughest Issues. Now, when I wrote this, I knew that pornography was really significantly impacting this generation of young people, but I had no idea how terrible it was going to be and how much worse it was going to get. And we have a pandemic that put 1.5 billion children isolated, with most of them, their main source of connection being online, and that is a vulnerability. So buckle in, we are going to talk some tough truths today, but I want you to leave here with hope for empowering your kids to say no to pornography, and with finding hope if they find themselves falling into a trap, falling, failing, and a way to find grace. So with that said, let's get started. I start in my book, Behind Closed Doors, sharing true stories from my clinical environment. And the story that I shared in this chapter was meeting a health professional who was in charge of a group that we were talking about human trafficking. And when I talk about this, usually afterwards people approach me with questions, and I expect those kinds of questions. But this particular health professional was really upset because I had talked about the intersection of pornography and human trafficking. And he said he had seen some really bad, disturbing things, some violent things and abusive things. And he was having some feeling torn between these opposing cultural paradigms. I mean, he really said, hey, I watch this every day, like as any red-blooded American male would do, but now I'm also a mandated reporter, so I'm not sure what to do. And it really struck me, the fact that this young man that I didn't know very well would disclose this. And it really struck me about the normalization in this generation, that really this is viewed as something very very normal. Now, if you grew up in the 70s, 80s, 90s, or before that even, your first exposure was maybe a what you might call a dirty magazine or a videotape someone had somehow gotten from somewhere, but that is nowhere near what teens experience today. The internet in the 90s really transformed this industry, and digital content is largely unregulated, and it creates endless possibilities for different content and different delivery. Now, nearly half of teens, and even younger, kids aged 9 to 16 years, half of them regularly encounter sexual material online. And I'm going to talk to you today about how that early exposure causes health risks, and even more concerning, repeated exposure. Get this, it actually changes the way your brain responds. It changes the way that your brain responds. I hope that you heard that, and we'll talk about that. So let's start with some definitions. What is pornography really? Well, that word actually originates from two Greek words, porneia, which is a broad term used to describe sexual immorality, and graphe, which means written word. So pornography is written or visual media that elicits a sexual response of the consumer. The Oxford Dictionary further states pornography is intended to stimulate erotic rather than aesthetic, or which is appreciation of beauty, or emotional feelings. And there are some significant intricacies of the legal definition that we won't get into, but it does intersect criminality, especially when it involves exploitation of minors, or like I mentioned before, human trafficking, forcing, coercing, or using it in abusive situations. So to quote Solomon in Ecclesiastes 1 verse 9, what has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. In the 1980s, an archaeologist actually discovered ancient pornographic petroglyphs in China. Can you believe that? A brothel in Pompeii, which I've actually been there myself. And of course, we all know Pompeii was covered by volcanic ash in the year AD 70, but it has erotic wall paintings there. And the earliest known films were produced in the 1890s. Now, no, I didn't say the 1980s, in the 1890s. So as soon as films started, we see the emergence of this industry. However, modern consumption is exploding with what they call the AAA engine. This is accessibility, affordability, and anonymity. So there's no more sneaking home a brown paper covered magazine from the gas station. You can surf online in a private browser, and teens have ways of making sure that they hide their activities online. Teens also have endless access to free materials, because a lot of companies will put out things for free to hook you in, of mind-boggling variety. As production shifts from, I'll use this term loosely, professionally generated to consumer generated media. Now, we discussed the rise of social media earlier, and the pornography industry has been equally empowered, as anyone can upload any content at any moment. And this expands the industry with the rise of really popular sites. And the most popular site in the United States actually boasts nearly 42 billion visitors per year. That's 50,000 searches a minute, 81 million daily average visits, and it's estimated 1 year of uploads could fill the memory of every smartphone on earth. Now, if you look in an advertisement search engine, which you have to know that companies are going out there and they are exploiting search algorithms, and they're trying to be found, especially by young people. And so they say things like, choose from millions of videos that stream quickly and high quality, including including amazing VR, which is virtual reality. And the first option listed, okay, this is really hard. Cover all of the sensitive ears, stepmoms and stepsisters. Yes, I'm being serious. This is what I see in the search engines. And parents, even though that may make you cringe, that is amazingly tame and entry-level kind of stuff. I mean, it is not even close to what you probably are imagining. Today, it is unregulated. And so we're talking about things like physical and psychological abuse. We're talking about exploiting people of color, people with disabilities. These are disproportionately exploited categories. And there is a whole vernacular, a whole lingo that goes along with this, including acronyms. And it is amazing to me when I go and speak in schools how familiar kids are with this vernacular. Even if they don't watch it, they know. I mean, we are talking about, this is lunchroom table talk. It is completely acceptable to have these conversations out in the open. And not too long ago, I was actually at an airport and I overheard a group of young men who looked like they were about college age having the most graphic conversation about their preferences and what they're watching. They didn't care that there were women and children around, that it was a public place. They didn't care. And so the point is, as parents, as grandparents, we need to be open to unfamiliar narratives. We need to empower our kids to dismiss those feelings of embarrassment or exclusion when they don't know what's being talked about by saying confidently. We need to empower them and prepare them to say, this is not a conversation I need to be a part of. See you later. And to walk away if the conversation doesn't stop. Now, consumption can be passive. It can be reading a book, which actually is enormously popular among high school girls and just girls, because you can look at any airport, at any drugstore, and you can see those kinds of books. Again, they're eliciting a response. Or it can be active, watching a video, but So we've got passive and active, but the trend that I'm worried about is that it's becoming interactive. So this is online chats or blogs or on-demand live performances, customized requests, and virtual reality. And what happens is when you have those interactive experiences online, the viewers become more and more dissatisfied with that, and they're wanting a physical outlet. But when they even find that physical outlet in person with real people, it doesn't live up to those online experiences because their body has been conditioned to respond to a computer. Now, researchers are still working on collecting reliable information, and it's hard because we're relying on self-report, which people may or may not share. So if anything, we have to know that some of these statistics are likely under-reporting. But let me just give you some of this information. 84.4% of males and 57% of females ages 14 to 18 report exposure to some sort of pornographic material. Now, it probably doesn't surprise you to hear the male statistic, but I want you to connect that 57% of females, because we are seeing more and more that girls are being targeted, girls are being exposed, girls are participating. 22% of underage consumers are less than 10 years old, and 36% are 10 to 14 years old. It is associated with more risk-taking behaviors, more aggression. And here's something interesting. 75% of parents, now this was a survey done in Britain, reported their child had no exposure at all, but only 53% of those children reported the same, which tells us that children experience exposure and they don't tell their parents. It's not always because they're trying to hide something or they're trying to do something bad. Sometimes they just don't understand what they've seen, or they feel embarrassed to talk about it. And of course, we know that the COVID-19 pandemic prompted an unprecedented spike in access, which drives demand. So we have more demand. And we also see, I would be remiss in not talking about video games and the way they impact teen attitudes about dating and violence. So again, and in another study surveying relationship partners, 50% of males, 50% admitted to watching pornography, while only 4% of their partners reported their knowledge of it. Now this, we know it's happening. When we come back, I'll talk to you about how it's impacting teen health and teen brains. And then later on, we'll talk about preventing exposure and what to do if you discover or disclose it in your home. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome back to this serious but really, really important conversation. I'll give you a warning to adjust your listening audience. We're talking about some adult things today. We're talking about the epidemic that is sweeping the country, and that is pornography. Now, in the first segment, I talked to you about how widespread it is and how we need to be concerned about it as parents and how we've gotten to where we are today. But now I'm going to talk to you about how it specifically impacts teen health. Now, we have to know that these videos often will feature staged lighting, scripting, surgical, cosmetic enhancements. These are not realistic portrayals of real people in real relationships and real situations. People in this media are paid to perform, or they're forced, coerced, or abused. There is no portrayal of healthy, realistic, consensual relationships. But 53% of boys and 39% of girls believe that it is a realistic portrayal of relationships, although we are talking about incredibly violent acts as normative. And this is what maybe where we have a generation gap and we don't understand. How can they think this is normal? But again, when they are saturated and immersed in this and seeing all of their peers talk about it like it's nothing, that is where we are. And pornography obviously doesn't educate consumers about pregnancy and infection and emotional and physical trauma. And frequent exposure negatively impacts relationship satisfaction. It decreases relational trust. It decreases your ability to communicate with words, to resolve conflict in a healthy way, or to find satisfaction in real life relationships. And teens with frequent exposure are more likely to criticize their partner's body. They're more likely to accept infidelity or violence, or revenge, or image-based abuse, which is another word for sexting. And this has a dose-graded effect. So it means that the more that they see, the greater these impacts. And it contributes to aggressive behaviors, distorted gender roles, objectifying women, unrealistic expectations, and high-risk behaviors. But what people are not talking about is that a lot of people use pornography because they feel lonely, isolated, anxious, or depressed, and this only makes those feelings worse. Research is clear. Now, let me talk to you about some brain science. Teens are especially vulnerable to chemical reactions and brain changes that are associated with exposure, especially repeated exposure. Teen brains are what we call neuroplastic. So that means they grow and they adapt by creating new pathways based on chemical influences, that's their raging hormones, environmental influences, how much time is spent creating these pathways, and how much emotional and psychological energy is expended. So initially, the brain responds to exposure with a significant stimulus, its arousal. The brain's reward center then releases dopamine. And then you know what? Their brain actually starts to rewire itself with a preference for that particular stimulus using a feedback loop. So the longer and the more often that neural pathway is used, the more it's reinforced, imagining it, entrenching itself in your brain. So basically, you are training your brain to desire pornography. Now, teens who frequently consume experience chronic stress. Now, that drives them to that stimulus for a temporary release of dopamine. So that's the feedback loop they're creating. I feel stress. Let me go to this stress relief. I have dopamine. But over time, that pathway becomes desensitized with a decreased response. It quiets the part of our brain, the prefrontal cortex, that helps us make good decisions. So now they're impairing their decision-making ability. And if they're cut off from accessing that pathway, it causes intense anxiety. To override this in the brain when they start becoming less sensitive to that neural pathway, the answer is not more pornography, but different with new or novelty escalation. So we're talking about new situations, and that includes different genders, races, ethnicities, different forms of violence or abuse. Now, here's the good news if you're starting to be really concerned. Brains can heal over time, especially kids' brains, and they can learn to create alternative, healthier pathways. But the older you are, the longer and more frequent you consume, the harder it is to rewire. So there was a Nobel-winning Prize researcher named Nico Tinbergen, and he conducted some fascinating research on how natural behaviors were influenced by visual stimulus. He called this supernormal stimuli. We're going to go and geek out on some science here really quick for a minute. Scientists created cardboard female butterflies, which they called a super stimulus, with more vibrant and colors and exaggerated features. So predictably, male butterflies attempted to mate with these paper cutouts. But unpredictably, when female butterflies were reintroduced, those male butterflies overwhelmingly preferred the cardboard version over the real butterflies. And that's the phenomenon that's seen when we have frequent exposure. And we are seeing that there is no official diagnosis of pornography addiction, but I can tell you, as a healthcare provider, I am seeing the health impacts of this present in clinical environments. And so there is a lot of work to be done to talk about internet addictions. And that also includes gaming and online gambling. But the thing is that we really have to be a countercultural message for our kids is that pornography depicts violence without consent, and teens who frequently view it are more likely to engage in violent acts and image-based abuse. That's sharing explicit images or videos without the person's consent. A recent study found that 1 in 3 young adults experienced image-based abuse, while 1 in 6 were perpetrators of image-based abuse. So because teens see this as such a realistic depiction, they seek to mimic it in real life. And this is where criminality gets very complicated when we talk about consent. And consent is a very difficult thing to define and has some complex legal implications. And this is why it's so important to talk to our kids about healthy physical relationships in the context of marriage, because consent cannot be given by someone who's underage, who's under the influence of drugs or alcohol, who is asleep or unconscious or any otherwise forced. And it's very difficult to talk about in legal terms. But what I'm seeing is that there is glorification of violence, not in just movies or videos or online internet sites that you would consider to be true pornography sites. I'm seeing this in mainstream movies, in movies that many, many teens have watched. And not only do they watch them over and over and over again and love movies. And they are glorifying violence. And this is conditioning women to think this is a normal part of a relationship, and conditioning men to think, and boys to think, That's what women want, and that is not the truth. Now, a lot of parents are really afraid to bring this up because they think, I don't want to expose my kid to this, frankly, garbage that is out there. I don't want them to know about things they don't know about yet. But here's my challenge to you, and here's my counterpoint. You can choose to expose them proactively in a healthy way, in a controlled environment, while we are empowering them to respond, or you can let fate take its course and respond after the fact. Now, I'll share with you, I've shared before that my daughter was actually in the fifth grade when a female classmate described to her in graphic detail a video she stumbled across on YouTube. Now, I had talked to her about this before, and I did not tell her all of the nitty-gritty details or every form of violence she might see. I said something like this. Now, there are screens everywhere you go, and people have different standards for what they watch, and sometimes people can come across things on screens that surprises them, that they don't expect, that's accidental. You will, not you might, you will see something on a screen at some point that is going to make you feel uncomfortable. It might even make your body react in a way that you don't understand. It might make you feel embarrassed or afraid, but I want you to know that when that happens, you come to me and talk about it, and I'll help you figure it out, and I'll help you through that. And that's exactly what happened. So the day that happened, she came right home. I was able to talk with the other mother who had no idea that this was going on, and we were able to intervene early, help our children understand what they had seen and heard, and rewire that brain pathway very, very quickly. Now, my son was 12 when I picked up his phone to see a group chat that was talking about things that I'll just leave to your imagination, but are along the lines of what we've been talking about. And it was extremely graphic and extremely inappropriate. Now, were these bad boys? No. Good kids can make poor decisions, and especially when they see this conversation normalized, that sometimes their smartphone moves faster than the decision-making center in their brain. Now, my son knew this wasn't appropriate, but he just ignored it, and he didn't recognize there was still risk because it was on his phone. So what happened? Well, my husband promptly got on the chat and reminded the boys, anyone can see these text chats at any time. And your character is so much more important. And we reported it to their coach. Now, what did the boys do? Well, they didn't think it was the dad. They thought it was my son playing a joke, and they upped the ante. Well, that was a tough learning experience for sure. But people often ask me, well, what did your son say? You know, I'm really grateful to say that he wasn't angry. He was a little embarrassed, but he was grateful for a way out of a situation that was over his head. He was disinvited from that group chat, which was just fine with him, and they knew what his stance was on that. So it's important to take a when, not if approach, talking to our kids about this, not just boys, remember, girls too. And teens are often watching these kinds of things together. I've talked on the show about other movies, and you can follow along on my social media where I do issue alerts and talking points. How do you talk to your kids about this? So instead of feeling ashamed and unprepared when they are exposed, talking to them ahead of time can empower them to be ready with a response and to share that experience with you. So instead of asking, you know, are you watching pornography? Like, that is such, it can feel accusatory. Just say, what have you seen lately online that makes you uncomfortable? That's an open-ended question. And they may say, what do you mean? Nothing. But it opens the door to conversation. Or they may say, you know, actually, I have seen this. Let me talk to you about this. The fact is that pornographic images stay in our minds forever, and the less exposure, the less intrusion and unwelcome thoughts. So it's most important to prevent exposure. That is our primary effort, is to make sure that they're not exposed. So ways you can do that are limit your kids' opportunities for private screen use. I don't allow my kids to have their phone in their bedroom because that's an intimate place where they feel safe and where their guard might be let down. We have a culture of accountability in our family. Put your home computer in an open area, such as the dining room or the living room. Our kids know the passwords to our phones. Or check in your phones to a central location at night, because let me tell you, I know this from personal experience talking to kids about this. Temptation can be strong in the wee hours of the quiet night in the privacy of your bedroom. But here's the thing, teens with strong parental attachment are less likely to intentionally seek out pornography. So invest in your relationship by spending time together. Do things that are all enjoyable and fun. It doesn't always have to be serious conversation. And in this culture where we sometimes adopt fear-based parenting, they can feel like that, like everything is serious and doom and gloom. And I'm looking at myself right here because my kids are saying, yeah, mom, like, you know what I do for a living and what I talk about. But hi, so kids, if you're listening, duly noted, the family buzzkill right here. I don't always have to talk about something serious. Another thing that's preventive is go to church. Teens with strong spiritual connections are less likely to struggle. The flip side of that is that kids who go to church but struggle, they may feel more shame and it may be harder for them to disclose. So lower that barrier by the not my kid mindset, thinking, oh, my kid would never, my kid could never. Help your kids to recognize the signs of unhealthy relationships, including jealousy, manipulation, bullying, threats of violence, self-harm, or pressure to engage with statements like, well, if you love me, you'll do this. Create a plan for walking away from that relationship. And if an adult ever initiates exposure, it needs to be reported to law enforcement immediately, as that falls under the legal definition of abuse in most states. And abusers will frequently use pornography to groom their victims. So for unintentional exposure, before it happens, make it clear to your teen you understand unintentional exposure can happen. And if you tell me about that, I'm not going to respond with anger or punishment or freak out. We can normalize that by disclosing possible ways. Tell them, I understand this can happen. You type in a website address wrong. You get an email from a friend or a text message from a friend that you open. Or you have an unknown social media account that all of a sudden pops up in your feed, or spam email, or someone showing it on their phone, or exposure to another friend or family member. So make it easier for them to say, hey, you know that thing you warned me about? It happened today. Can we talk about it? Empower your teen to walk away from social pressure. Tell them how to block their email contacts or mark email as spam or report it to you. When you come back, we'll have more hope.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at afr.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hello, friends. Welcome back. And we are in the middle of a critical conversation of how to empower your kids to respond to pressure. Now, this is the time to adjust your listening audience if you're just joining us, and know that we're talking about tough things, but things that are really important that our kids are exposed to. And we need to lead with courage and empathy while respecting and preserving their dignity. These kinds of topics, no parent wants to talk about, and kids want to talk about it even less. But this is the reality of the world that we're living in. We can't parent and thinking they live in the world we want them to live in, but in the world that they do live in. And scripture tells us in this world, we will have trouble, but we can take heart because Christ has overcome the world, and that's where we find hope. Now, in the first segment, we talked about pornography. We talked about the raging epidemic that it is. I cannot emphasize to you enough how much I hear about this from my own children in their peer groups, from my patients, from my students, just everywhere. This is an unseen epidemic. And in the last segment, we talked about the brain science of how this impacts our brain and what we can do. Now, I'm emphasizing this again. This is a when, not if conversation, because there is just no way, unless you live out in the middle of nowhere and have no digital connection, which you wouldn't be listening to this podcast, or you never go to the grocery store and just look at the headlines on the tabloids. I mean, that's another way that one of my daughters was exposed to something I didn't want her exposed to. But what are we supposed to do? Not go to the grocery store? So we definitely want to protect our kids from exposure, but we have to be realistic and understanding that those exposures can happen. So our goal is to make them minimal, have them come to us early with that disclosure so that we can intervene before this has a significant impact on their brain. And the truth is that this is a traumatic experience. So let's talk about, we talked about preventing unintentional exposure. And I want to go back and say one other thing that can be really uncomfortable, but that is really important. When kids are unintentionally exposed, they come across it in some accidental way, it can make their body respond. And they may feel a lot of shame about that. Is that a sin? Is that bad? And they're not going to ask you about it. I promise you that. But they might struggle with some inner guilt. And so you can say something like this: God created your sexuality. Your body had the right response in the wrong circumstance. You shouldn't feel embarrassed or ashamed by that. And you have no idea what guilt you might release them from something that wasn't their fault. Now, a lot of times what I encounter is that parents discover this, and that is can be a really difficult thing. You find something on their phone, on their computer, in their bedroom. And as hard as it is, and as, you know, as it sounds easy, you have to stay calm. Don't go running in and yelling and, you know, charging in like guns a-blazing. You really need to take a minute and step back and be calm. Now, the truth is we're not really angry with them. We're angry that something has threatened them, has threatened our constructs of security that we have. So you need to talk to somebody about it. And certainly not everybody needs to know everything, but somebody needs to know something. Now, that might be your primary healthcare provider. It might be a mentor, a trusted friend, a minister, or just somebody that you trust, a counselor. Ask for advice and support. Choose your timing for the conversation and lead with the facts of what you know. Don't set them up to lie by asking something to which you already know the answer. Don't say, "Are you watching pornography?" If you know that they are, or you're reasonably confident they are, ask them to share their perspective and say, "Here is what I know. We need to talk about this. What do you know? What would you like me to know in this situation before we go any further?" And make sure that you're prepared to talk about the risks and the health impacts. And depending on their response, tell them you'll take some time to think about the events and follow up with actions to give accountability and restore trust. Most importantly, we have to express our unconditional love. I will always love you no matter what happens. We can tell our kids we love them a million times, but they are afraid. Kids do have a core fear. If I do this, you won't love me anymore. Part of that is the way their brain is developmentally wired to see justice. Everything is black and white. And if I do this, then I disappoint them. And they care very much what we think. So practice saying, whether it's pornography or any other disclosure that causes you distress, say something like, "Thank you for sharing this with me. I'm so sorry you experienced this. Obviously, this is upsetting. We have some conversation to have, but no matter what, I will love you no matter what, and I am committed to help get through this together." That can radically change the trajectory of your recovery from an experience like this. Now, if they disclose it, I want to tell you that they're already upset. They're at a tipping point because there is risk in disclosure. They know there's going to be consequences. They know you're going to be disappointed, but it means they're in over their head and they need help. Now, if your child is under the age of 12, you really need to make an appointment with a healthcare provider to guide the decision making about evaluation and therapy. As hard as this can be to hear, that can be an indication of experiencing abuse or indication of some underlying mental health concerns. So under 12, you really should make an appointment. Traumatic exposures can also be damaging. So if they are over 12-ish, you know, that's a loose guideline, the medical evaluation depends on how often are they watching? How much distress is it causing? Is this already creating mental health problems? If the exposure was relatively short term and infrequent, honestly, sometimes dragging them to confession or therapy or to tell the minister what they've done, that's shaming, and that can likely do more harm than good. So seek guidance from a trusted friend, a mentor, a healthcare provider on how to set up accountability moving forward. And always, always, if there are signs of mental health concerns, call your healthcare provider. Now, guilt is a healthy emotion. So when we touch a hot stove, our brain signals danger and we take our hand away quickly. Guilt warns us to leave a situation causing harm. Guilt tells us what we did was wrong, but shame tells us who we are is wrong. Guilt helps us to understand our actions impact our future. Our actions impact other people, but shame says, you are deeply flawed and you are unworthy of love. Shame leads to self-harming behaviors. It leads to addiction. It leads to depression. And so we as parents need to harness guilt as a helpful, healthy prompt to change behavior. And we need to speak against feelings of shame by expressing messages of hope and worthiness of love. And the truth is, what they've experienced is likely consequence enough. And then you set up guards and accountability in the future. Now, here's the thing. Plan for a response. Tell your teen what the consequences may look like if they disclose, what the road to grace looks like. And know that some of you, your kids may have already experienced an exposure that they're just scared to talk about. So create expectations for your response. Create that open door for them to talk about it. And you never know what kind of healing you can find there. Now, in my book, Behind Closed Doors, A Guide for Parents and Teens to Navigate Through Life's Toughest Issues, I have a section in every chapter called Behind the Heart Door. And that's because when we face these issues our kids are facing, it can be really hurtful to our hearts. And I want to tread gently here, but speak to some of you as parents. Many of you, even those of you listening, regularly consume pornography. And you're wondering, how in the world can I talk to my teen and walk them through this issue without feeling like a hypocrite? Now, the emphasis in this chapter is on the detrimental effects pornography has on teen brains, but darkness that engulfs everyone here, including adults, is secrecy. I've seen professionally and personally in my circles the crushing weight of this weary load destroying families, and every time, the story is the same. And it always involves deception until that excruciating moment of discovery when it feels like a grenade explodes. There is freedom and hope for you. And I want to share with you this devotional about King David. He had it all. The Bible actually says he was glowing with health and he had a fine appearance with handsome features. He was a musician, a singer, a songwriter, and an instrumentalist. He slayed giants. He killed lions and bears with his bare hands. He was an adored and celebrated king of Israel. Women loved him, but his secret destroyed him as well as innocent lives around him. As he was walking on his palace roof, he saw a beautiful woman bathing. He could have walked away, but his lust won out and he abused his power to take her, regardless of the cost. And this reads much like a modern pornography script. There was no consent here. Secrets spin complicated webs until you're consumed by your efforts to keep your secret at all costs, even to the point of death. But God knows every secret of our hearts. Every secret will come to light. God demands an account. And David described this feeling as a groaning while his body wasted away, vitality drained like a fever. And after confessing his sin, David described God as his hiding place, surrounding him with shouts of deliverance and freedom. And so I want to pray for you in a prayer that I took from Galatians 5, chapters 5 and 6. And I want to pray for you to find freedom and victory. Thank you, Lord, for the freedom we have in Christ. Help us to stand fast in the liberty Christ has freely gifted us. Save us from being entangled and burdened by the weight of pornography. Call us to freedom. Help us to see freedom as you intended, not as freedom to sin, but as freedom from sin. And if we are ensnared by temptation, help us restore each other with a spirit of gentleness and compassion, carrying the burden together. Help us to walk daily by your Spirit. Let love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control be the fruits of the freedom in our lives. Peace and mercy be upon us, and may the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ be with us forever. Amen. Now, often we think about, okay, we have to go and have this tough conversation with our kids, but I want to challenge you to a different approach. In my book, I give a prompt for what I call a legacy letter in every chapter. Now, letters are something that are novel to Gen Z and Gen Alpha, which is the generation that's coming up behind Gen Z. They're kind of fascinated with vintage technology. I'm talking about things like record players and Polaroid cameras or digital cameras. And for teens today and kids today, communication is largely digital and disposable. They don't know the familiar comfort of seeing someone's handwriting that you know and love. That's not as normal to them. And their text messages are set to delete, or social media messages are set to delete. And so writing your child a letter is a unique way to connect with them. Now, there is a catch. I will be honest with you. You can't expect a response. You can have a beautiful experience writing your kid a letter. I've done this myself. I am practicing what I preach. And, you know, there's one letter in particular. I was weeping. It was so moving. It was so beautiful. And what you might get back is that's weird. But just know that they may need time to process their emotions and to say, hey, thanks for that. And maybe they don't say anything about it, but you'll see it tucked into their desk drawer or pinned on their bulletin board. So for this letter, I want you to think of a healthy, edifying relationship that your kid has with someone. It could be a friend, a family member, a coach, a teacher, a younger kid, an elderly person, or someone in your church. Who do you love for your child to be with because it brings out the best in their personality? Who is spurring them on to good works? Who makes you as the parent at ease because you know your kid is safe and loved and supported? Who makes their personality shine through with confidence? Find or take a photo of your child and that person and write a letter detailing what you admire and appreciate about that healthy relationship, and specify ways that that person brings out the best in your child. Now, often as parents, we adopt negative parenting strategies. If we don't like a particular friend or influence, we're quick to say that. I don't want you hanging around that person. But let's rethink our thinking together. Let's adopt a new mindset and a new skill set, and listen in as I share with you more ways that I've learned to flip the script and, instead of limiting negative influences, cultivating positive ones. That is the way to go. Well, thank you so much for listening to this really tough conversation. If you want to know more about other topics facing our teens today, you can get it in my book, Behind Closed Doors, a guide to help parents and teens navigate through life's toughest issues. And I'll see you here next time, where we prescribe hope for healthy families. God bless.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.